You know, Jason, I think everyone should be insulted by this, the intentional nature of this. Easter is a religious holiday. It is such a sacred day where we all meet at the cross. They are insulting every Christian who holds this day as a sacred day.
So surprised by the misinformation that's been out there around this, and I want to be very clear. Every year, for the past several years, on March 31st, Transgender Day of Visibility is marked. And as we know, for folks who understand the calendar and how it works, Easter falls on different Sundays, right? Every year. And this year, it happened to coincide with Transgender Visibility Day. And so that is the simple fact. That is what has happened. That is where we are.
It's Thursday, April the 4th, 2024. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey K. Lyons, and this is Narrative Wars. The White House is in 100% public relations damage control mode. It's like the staff is running around in circles and Joe Biden's hair, or what's left of it, is on fire, and they're trying to put it out. What has caused all this fuss, you may ask? Well, you heard in the opening sound clips, Joe Biden and his leftist atheist goons have decided to double down on the transforming of America that Obama started. But rather than use the nuanced approach, which Obama did, Joe Biden decided to see how far he could push the envelope by insulting every evangelical and practicing Catholic in the United States of America. How'd they do that? Well, they decide to declare Easter 2024 as Transgender Day of Visibility. Well, you know, here at Narrative Wars, we don't do this often, but there it is. Yeah, we're just gonna have to call it the way it is. And there's a flag right there. There's a flag on the field. I can see it. Yeah, we got to call that out. Also coming up in today's program, the Biden administration is breaking the law and going against a Supreme Court order by unilaterally announcing that we'll forgive $6 billion in student debt and maybe more. Canada has placed a new 1.8 million EV fire truck in service, and you wouldn't believe what's happened. And Oregon has admitted that its policy of decriminalizing drugs has been a complete failure by passing a new law this week. All of this coming up in today's episode of Narrative Wars. You don't want to miss this.
We the people are sick and tired.
Let's peel back the curtain of confusion to shed light upon the mainstream media madness. And now, Narrative Wars, with your host, Jeffrey K. Lyons.
We the people are sick and tired. So tired.
We are continuing to produce programs that peel back the curtain of the mainstream media madness. And if you enjoy listening to this program, then we ask you to please 5-star rate this program on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcasting apps. This would push the program up in the algorithm and internet search engines and really help us out. Thank you very much. And just search, all you need to do is just search for Jeffrey K. Lyons, that's Lyons with a Y, Apple Podcast, to give a 5-star rating. And you can also leave those 5-star ratings on any of your favorite apps such as Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many, many more. Thank you for your support. Well, we're going to jump right into our first piece here, the White House Transgender Day of Visibility story. And wow, did it blow up over the Easter weekend. Yeah, I could play the cut again, but I'm not going to do that. You heard it in the opening segment. But we're going to go through this, and I'm just going to go through some of this language that KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, used and talk about gaslighting. All right, let's jump into it. So surprised, she says, by the misinformation that's been out there around this. And I want to be very, yeah, she always wants to be very clear. Okay, so here we go again, the use of that word misinformation. And here's a misuse of the word misinformation. So we're just going to call it. Yep. For KJP and her communist friends, misinformation now means if you don't interpret the set of facts that we're presenting in this story about March the 31st, Transgender Day of Visibility, if you don't interpret those facts the same way that we do, then there's something wrong with you. And then she doubles down and says, every year, March 31st is Transgender Day of Visibility. Now, how many in the audience knew that? And really, how many, now that they are aware of that, even give a flippity-do-rip? No, that's what I thought. I don't see very many hands going up out there. Not very many. Look, here's the response. Christians have been celebrating the resurrection of Christ for, let's think about it, over 2,000 years. They're not interested in taking a back seat to Transgender Day of Visibility. But this is what communists do because they hate religion. They try to shove their own agenda, which is an atheistic agenda, down everybody's throats so that they will be in charge of the narrative. Well, this is a clear attempt by atheists and God haters to wipe Christian holidays in America off the calendar. Next, they're going to come after Good Friday and Christmas. Well, they kind of already did that with Christmas. It's more about gifts and shopping and Xmas. And anyway, so she goes on to say, as we know, for folks who understand the calendar and how it works, Easter falls on different Sundays. Really? Okay, so yeah, if you don't know this and if you don't agree with it, then there's something wrong with you. Okay, that's already implied. For those who understand the calendar and how it works, you know, she's talking to a room full of White House press correspondents, but she's addressing them like they're a bunch of preschoolers. And she's talking to the American people. She knows that this is going to go out over the networks. And she's treating all of America as if we're preschoolers. I mean, this is demagoguery. This is sophistry. And this is over the top gaslighting, all wrapped up in one. She continues, this year it happened to coincide with Transgender Visibility Day. And she continues, and so this is a simple fact. That's what has happened. This is where we are. Well, I'm saying no. No, this is not where we are. I don't give a flippity-do rip about Transgender Day of Visibility. Listen, we've covered this in past shows. When a person becomes transgender, they cut off body parts, they chemically castrate these people. They become basket cases and they become lifelong recipients of drugs and treatment, which is going to run up a bill of about $1 million, possibly more, over their lifetime. So she's doubling down on atheism, and this is where we are. We're going to cast out the celebration of the resurrection of Christ, substitute the Easter celebrations for the celebration of an idol, the idol of transgenderism. No, I don't think so. You know, why make such a stupid move? And this is, we're going to kind of wrap up this first story here with this question. Why would Biden and his communist cronies make such a stupid, over-the-top move? Frustrating and angering over 50% of the Americans. 50% of Americans, or more, maybe 60, 70%. There's 2 days out of every year that every pastor, every minister is aware of where they have a large crowd, Christmas and Easter. And there's a lot of people that are just CEO followers of Christ. That's Christmas and Easter only. Listen, Easter is a biggie. So why would you insult the majority of Americans on Easter? And here's my theory. Democrat, Marxist, atheists want to see how far they can push you. They're doing this on purpose. They want to see how far they can push you to see how much they can get away with before America pushes back. They want to know, is America going to push back? And because if they don't, if Americans overall don't push back, then they're going to push harder and they're going to take away even more of our liberties. So the question is, are you going to push back? Are you going to say no? Because if you don't, they, the communist Marxists in the White House, will take away even more of your freedoms. And I don't think that's going to be a problem with the audience that listens to this show. I have a very good idea where you stand, and I love reading your comments in Getter and True Social. I know you're not going to stand for this nonsense. Moving to our next piece right here. The Biden administration on Thursday has said it's forgiving almost $6 billion in student debt for 77,700 borrowers. Of course, they're going to want to increase that figure, with these recipients scheduled to receive an email from Joe Biden alerting them about their debt cancellation. Ooh, you're going to get an email from Uncle Joe. You don't have to be responsible. Look, I went to the university quite a lot, actually. I'm undergraduate, graduate, master's, and a PhD. But I had student loans, and I paid off my student loans. Why should someone else go to school and not have to pay their bills? Look, it's like this. Do we think that people should be able to buy houses and the government just pays off their mortgage? Or not even a house, a car, and the government pays off? If they get away with this, that's what's going to be next. And we'll have a bankrupt nation. But let's listen to cut number two. Here's Senator Mike Lee pushing back against this. And this is March 27, 2024, Fox Business. This is cut number two, and it's a 43-second cut. Let's take a listen to this.
Senator Mike Lee from the great state of Utah. Senator Lee, welcome. You're an attorney. I mean, what in the English language does Joe Biden not understand? The Supreme Court has said you do not have the authority to do this, and he keeps on doing it. Could you just help me out on this?
Look, the Supreme Court has said it. Nancy Pelosi has said it. The rest of us acknowledge it. The President of the United States doesn't have the authority unilaterally to go around canceling this many loans at once, just at the stroke of the executive pen. And yet he defiantly persists, insisting that he's going to find ways to do what he's already been told he may not do under the law.
So last I checked, there's three branches of government. And the House of Representatives, the Article 1 branch of government, they're the ones that control the budget, the purse strings. And so the Biden administration can't just declare we're going to spend billions of dollars and we're going to forgive student debt. But this is what they're doing. CNN, June 30th, 2023. You know, our memories are so short. Biden's student loan forgiveness program was rejected by, the Supreme Court. And here's what borrowers need to know. So I'm just going to read a couple lines or paragraphs from this. Washington, CNN, Supreme Court struck down President Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness program. Again, this was in June of 2023, not very long ago, blocking millions of borrowers from receiving up to $20,000 in federal student debt relief, just months before student loan payments are set to restart. So they hadn't even been making payments. Their payments were stopped, put on hold during COVID. And then right before they were supposed to start him again, Biden announced, I'm just going to give you up to $20,000 to wipe out student loan debt. Later Friday, the president announced that his administration will pursue another pathway to providing some student debt relief, which is based on a different law than the one the now defunct student loan forgiveness program was linked to. So that's exactly what he is trying to do. Biden and his Marxist communist cronies, they are trying to twist the law and they are trying to go around the Supreme Court. Basically, they're lawbreakers. They're lawless. And this is what we have. This is where we are. March 21st, 2024, Biden administration forgives $6 billion in student debt. And here's who qualifies. The people who qualify for the latest round of student loan forgiveness are public service employees, teachers, nurses, social workers, firefighters. The White House said in a statement, on a per-person basis, forgiveness amounts to about $77,000 per person. So it went up from June 30th, 2023, from giving away $20,000 per person to giving away up to $77,000 per person. Ever since the Supreme, this is continuing in the CBS Morning News article, and the links are in the show notes as always. Ever since the Supreme Court last year invalidated the Biden administration's plan for broad-based student loan forgiveness, Biden administration sought to rely on existing and new loan repayment plans to provide debt relief to almost 4 million people. So, yeah, they've come up with a new way to twist the law, go around the Supreme Court, go around Congress, because Congress is supposed to appropriate funds. So, I mean, you may say, well, all they're doing is forgiving loans. It's not costing. Well, it is costing because those loans were taken out. Real money was spent. And then money is supposed to go back in to the coffers in order to replace the money that was spent. So if that money doesn't come back in, then yes, there is a real cost involved. So final points here on this one before we move along. This is going to be challenged in court again. I mean, just as we heard in the cut, with Senator Mike Lee. Biden doesn't have the right to do this, to just cancel these loans unilaterally. That's the stuff of dictators, and that's the way he's acting. Secondly, this was rolled out before November election. Oh, what a surprise. I didn't even notice that. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it was rolled out before the November election. To do what? To influence, to buy votes from people who have outstanding loans. Of course, they're gonna vote for that policy. $77,000 in money forgiven. And this is going to affect thousands of people. Biden is hoping that this will go through and that it will put him over the top in November of this year. Final point, this is a lawless executive branch acting without the approval of Congress, handing out money that it does not have. Ladies and gentlemen, if you found value in this program, please share it with one or two like-minded friends. We rely on listeners like you to keep this program in production. On social media, you can find us both on Getter and Truth Social. Just search for @JeffreyKLyons. That's Lyons with a Y, @JeffreyKLyons. And I look forward to reading your comments and hearing your thoughts. Coming up next, it seems there's a problem with Canada's first electric fire truck. Vancouver's brand new $1.8 million fire truck was in service for less than a month before it was sidelined for repairs. This story, and it came out a few weeks ago, but it's worth talking about because this trend is taking place in the United States also, and now it's taking place in Canada. CTV News, Canadian television, February 28, 2024, Canada's first electric fire truck was in service less than a month before it needed repairs. Ha! What kind of repairs? You know, they just spent $1.8 million on this brand new shiny truck. Vancouver Fire Resource Services spokesperson, Matthew Trudeau. That's interesting. Another Trudeau. Confirms the repair work involves the vehicle's water tank. But none of the electrical or battery systems and the cost of the work is covered by the manufacturer, Rosenbauer. Well, no problem. You know, it's a fire truck that can't carry water because the water tank leaks. That, you know, it's still worth $1.8 million. You know, just forget that point that the water tank leaks. Trudeau says the vehicle was in service from December 4, 2023 to January 2, 2024. And it's been out of service ever since. So let's see, January, February. It's about 2 months out of service. Leaky tank, brand new truck, $1.8 million. Quote, as brand new apparatus enter the VFRS fleet, it's routine and expected that mechanical issues come up, Trudeau says. Ha! Routine and expected. But I'd ask for a refund. You know, we quickly work with manufacturers to resolve them and improve their response capability. Quickly work. 2 months. Hope there weren't any fires that needed to be put out during those 2 months. The article continues, blah, 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 water leaks, sideline North America's first Rosenberg RTX truck, which was brought by Los Angeles Fire Department. So LA Fire Department bought one of these trucks from the same manufacturer back in 2022. And look at this. The same thing happened. A water leak. So they've had a couple of years to work on this. And they still have not figured it out. Boy, I think I would be asking for a refund. The department said the truck is smaller, more maneuverable than a traditional truck, and it can go 100 kilometers on a single charge. That means you can go 50 kilometers to a fire, which is not very far, and 50 back to the station on one charge. Otherwise, no charge. It doesn't move at a cost of $1.8 million. That's $300,000 to half a million more than a new diesel engine truck. Oh, yeah. But there are huge environmental and health benefits to the electric truck, as diesel fumes are known carcinogens. Well, you know, I don't think the firemen are going to stand directly behind a diesel-powered vehicle and breathe in the exhaust. I mean, that's not going to happen. You know, you need a reliable vehicle that's going to get there. And I've talked to people that drive these tractor trailers, you know, the diesel trucks, the 18-wheelers. They can go a million miles without a major service. So they really are reliable. So basically what they did was they fixed a problem that wasn't broken. But let's roll the clock back a little bit. America's first electric fire truck reports for duty in Hollywood. Okay, this must have been what inspired the people, Mr. Trudeau. Not the prime minister, a different Trudeau over in Canada. That's Matthew Trudeau, Vancouver Fire Rescue Services spokesperson. Guess there's a lot of Trudeaus over there. The first electric fire truck in the U.S. has arrived in Los Angeles. This was May 19, 2022. L.A. Fire Department took delivery of the truck. Rosenbauer RTX, May 14th. Let me see. Rosenbauer RTX. Yep. Same truck. Same company that went to Canada. Same truck. It will be deployed in LAFD, Los Angeles Fire Department, Station 82 in Hollywood. Of course. In Hollywood, of course. Yeah, you want to parade it around there and get it in, sneak it in a couple movies and show that thing off. Yeah, how they're saving the planet. The RTS is actually a range extended vehicle. Diesel engine acting as a generator to help charge the 132 kilowatt battery. Wait a minute. A diesel engine acts as a generator. So in the electric vehicle, we have a diesel engine. Did you catch that? Which generates electricity to power the batteries that this thing runs off of. The BMW Source 3.0 liter inline six kicks on when the charge drops to 20%. It can recharge the battery pack in 45 minutes. So, okay. Let's say the thing is going down the road and they run out of juice. It can't get to the fire. Not a problem, folks. Diesel engine kicks in and they only have to wait 45 minutes to get to the fire. Okay, well, that's acceptable, right? I mean, I guess the neighbors can squirt with their hoses, you know, if a house is on fire, 45 minutes, that's not a problem. Propulsion is handled by a pair of electric motors, blah, blah, blah. I did a little additional research here. Where in the United States of America, what cities or what other cities are they buying these EV trucks? Any guess? Want to take a guess? Well, they're other blue cities. Democrat-controlled cities. Mesa, Arizona. Pumper's Truck. New home. Station 221. Built in 2021. Equipped with an EV charger capable of fully recharging the vehicle. And this EV charger can recharge the electric truck in wait. How long does it take to charge the fire truck? 3.5 hours. Wait a moment. That's kind of going backwards, isn't it? Because the other one took 45 minutes. 3.5 hours. So again, you know, if it runs out of power on the way to a fire, not an issue. You only have to wait 3.5 hours to recharge it before it gets to the fire. Okay. But hey, we all feel good about this because the Vector electric fire truck will help support the city of Mesa, Arizona's, get this, climate action plan. Okay, yeah, it supports the climate action plan. Totally, I understand. And the goal of achieving carbon neutrality by 2050. Notice how they keep pushing out those dates. It was 2030, now it's 2050. You know, like half the population, maybe a third of the population, you know, will be gone by then. And so, yeah, they'll just keep pushing out those dates. So one other city, one other gem in the United States of America, St. Paul, Minnesota. First fire department in Minnesota with a fully electric fire truck. The mayor and the fire chief announced Wednesday. Rosenbauer, a design and manufacturing company, started to build. Okay, so this is that first company, you know, the one that the $1.8 million fire truck, the same one, which Rosenbauer. Yeah, that's the one that's in Canada and also Los Angeles. Okay. St. Paul looks like they bought one of those. Rosenbauer. Deliveries expected all the way in 2025, but they're really excited. Put out a press release about this. It's planned to coincide with the completion of a new Fire Station 7 on the east side of St. Paul, Minnesota. City is requesting federal funding. Well, yeah, and you know, $1.8 million, it's, you know, most people don't have that just sitting around. RTS electric fire truck, estimating they're gonna save $25,000 a year. Oh, here is the important part of the whole story. It brings us all the critical green energy benefits of an electric vehicle. Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, we all feel good about that, right? Green energy benefits. Yeah, really not. No. No, not really. Because who knows? Because the water tank on this new one that's going to get delivered in 2025, it might be leaky also. But we're all going to feel good about ourselves because in the city of St. Paul, Minnesota, the city's climate action and resilience plan is going to be focused on. It's going to be, you know, achieved, or it's going to move in that direction. It's going to move the needle forward to achieve that plan, which is, here it is again. Oh, what a surprise. Carbon neutrality in the city operations by 2030. Huh. It's as if, you know, the same communist one world government people are writing this stuff and these cities are just adopting it. Oh, and they want it in use in citywide operations by 2050. Again, look, why not 2049 or 2051? What's so special about 2050? I don't know. Quote, in addition to furthering climate goals, this investment helps reduce diesel emissions and supports firefighters' overall health. Okay, yeah. That's a benign statement. Boulder, Colorado. They did it too. They're going to get a RTX engine. It looks like most of these states are buying these fire engines from Rosenbauer, with the exception of one city, Mesa, Arizona. They bought a Vector electric fire truck. Well, they didn't get the memo that you really should have got. The more expensive one from Rosenbauer, the RTX, the one with a leaky water tank. That's the one you want. So blah, 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 Boulder, Colorado, they put in an order too. They're all excited. They put out a press release delivering the RTX engine. It's going to take place late 2024 or early 2025, blah, blah, blah. Now, here's the clincher, and here's where we can really feel good about ourselves. The adoption of the electric engine by Boulder Fire Rescue signifies the city's commitment to, you guessed it, combating climate change. And, oh, there's an and here. Ha! It's even more exciting than the other cities. Here it is. Promoting inclusivity in the fire department. What? Inclusivity? So now inclusivity means an electric fire truck next to a diesel fire truck. You know, that's inclusivity now. Man, can this stuff get even more bizarre? I can't make this up. This is really happening, folks. And all the links are in the show notes. All right, we're moving on to our last story here, and this is taking place in Oregon once again. We're not talking about fire trucks. We're talking about recriminalizing drugs. In other words, drugs bad, don't do drugs, or you'll go to jail. All right, here's the lead-in to the story. In 2020, voters overwhelmingly approved, this is Oregon voters, of a ballot measure to decriminalize the possession of small amounts of hard drugs. But here's an update. According to National Public Radio, 3.5 years later, public opinion has turned against the groundbreaking approach. And the state legislature has acted to, here's a surprising comment, restore criminal penalties for hard drugs. The state experienced rising overdose deaths. Imagine that. High rates of drug use. Yeah, because they legalized drugs, folks. If you legalize drugs, people are going to do what? They're going to take drugs. And open air use on the streets. You know, drug use everywhere. Needles on the ground. People passed out. Bodies. I won't get into the smell. Parks. Camping areas. Unnerving many residents. So, let's fast forward. April 2024. Oregon recriminalizes drug use after its experiment with decriminalizing drugs has proven a complete failure. Let's listen to this. This is our final cut. Cut number 4. The governor of Oregon signs a bill which recriminalizes drugs in Oregon. This is from a local station in Oregon, Fox 12, April the 1st, 2024. This is a 34-second cut.
Oregon's first-in-the-nation drug decriminalization law is being rolled back now that the governor has signed House Bill 4002. The Oregon House and Senate passed the bill to reinstate criminal penalties for the possession of small amounts of drugs last month. The bill creates an unclassified misdemeanor for people caught with small amounts of drugs like fentanyl. It comes with a punishment up to 6 months in jail. But the bill also allows counties to opt into a deflection program, referring people to treatment programs instead of jail. The bill goes into effect immediately.
So we're going to roll the clock back a little bit. August 1st, 2023, New York Times, not exactly a conservative publication. The hard drug decriminalization disaster. That is the title of the article in the New York Times in August of 2023. So this is a editorial piece, and basically they say that Oregon's Drug Addiction Treatment Recovery Act, that's what it was known as, Measure 110, complete disaster, total failure. New York Times saw this back in August of last year. They could figure it out. It took another 6 months, 8 months, way into 2024 for the people of Oregon to figure it out. In 2020, the article says, Oregon voters approved, 58% in favor, measure to decriminalize possession of small amounts of hard drugs, such as, here's the list, cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and established drug treatment programs. All right, just a small fine. So, now comes the reality check. Quote, on her walk to work at Fort Portland, that's F-O-R-T-E, Portland, coffee shop and wine bar that she operates with her brother in the sunken lobby of a commercial building. Jennifer Merle sidesteps needles, shattered glass, and human feces. Yuck. The Times' Jan Hoffman reported this week. Often, she says, someone has passed out in front of the lobby door, blocking her entrance. The other day, a man lurched in, laid down on the Forte couch, stripped off his shirt and shoes, and refused to leave. Oh, yeah, okay. This story has been repeating over and over again in Oregon. And so, the article continues, what these anecdotes suggest, the data confirm, 2019, there were 280 unintended opioid overdose deaths in Oregon. So, after this measure was passed, in 2019, there were 413 shooting incidents in Portland. In 2022, there were 1,309 shooting incidents. So, look, crime went through the ceiling. What we have is more overdose deaths. It almost tripled, not quite, certainly doubled. And then shooting incidents, it went up three times, 300%. It has cost taxpayers a lot of money. Businesses have left Oregon. Total disaster. The point is, Oregon has finally figured it out that decriminalizing drugs was a bad idea. And now a few closing comments. Have face-to-face conversations with people in your neighborhood. Freedom of speech is a privilege that we have in this country. We are in a battle for the heart and soul of America. Our actions today, including how we vote, will become the history that future generations read about. America shall remain the land of the free and the home of the brave, a place where we can still proclaim liberty throughout the land. And that's a comforting thought. Until next time for Narrative Wars, I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey K. Lyons.
We the people are sick and tired. Hey! So tired. Hey!